U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Day two of the public impeachment hearings unfold on Friday. We'll tell you what happened. Plus, Deval Patrick, a former governor of Massachusetts, joins the Democratic presidential race. Does he have a chance? And Elizabeth Warren makes a foil of rich men in a new TV ad. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal with the stars of stage and screen, Bill McGurn. Bill, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
I think you're the stage fellow. And Kim, you're the Kim Strassel is, she's the screen star. Or I don't know. They're both
time for my close-up.
Falstaff.
So welcome, everybody. And the hearing today at the House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Adam Schiff, invited Marie Yovanovitch, the former Ukrainian ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who was fired by Donald Trump after a fairly extensive campaign of public criticism and private criticism, led by Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, and including Donald Trump Jr. and others. She testified about what she knew about the Ukrainian episode that is the center of the impeachment attempt by the House Democrats, or to impeach Donald Trump, the House Democrats. And the biggest event of the day was a tweet by Donald J. Trump about the hearing, saying, "Everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went, turned bad. She started off in Somalia. How did that go? Then fast forward to Ukraine, where the new Ukrainian president spoke unfavorably about her in my second phone call with him. It is a U.S. president's absolute right to appoint ambassadors," end quote. Kim, he's absolutely right. It is his right to appoint ambassadors. But was this another case of Donald Trump hurting himself?
Yeah, I mean, why speak now? And look, in real time, as this happened, as he sent out this tweet, you saw Adam Schiff's eyebrows perk up, and he intervenes in the hearing and says, "This looks to me like an attempt to intimidate a witness." And right there, you see Democrats now already debating adding this as an additional article of impeachment. So there's that, just putting himself
just,
in a position.
That, yeah.
There's that. And then there's also the point that, look, I mean, isn't the president going to get a lot more mileage if he just acts as though this is a sideshow and a distraction? He ignores it and he points out to the American people that he's instead busy getting the work done of the country for them while the Democrats are doing this. And in fact, also put some pressure on Democrats saying, "Why are we going through all of this when there is important things that need to be done? You're not doing them because you're so obsessed here."
That's precisely the advice that Bill Clinton, none other than Bill Clinton, gave the president of how to handle impeachment in an interview with CNN. Good advice, I think. And it's also, Bill, even as the impeachment hearing was starting, the press corps asked the president asked a White House spokesman how the president would be what he would be doing during the hearing. And he said, well, he's going to listen to Devin Nunes's comments. That's the ranking member. And then he's going to go about his business helping the American people. Well, apparently he was watching on TV, spending his time watching the impeachment. It gives the impression that he's consumed by this.
Yeah. Well, I would be consumed by it, too. Right. If they were going to remove you as president, it's a big deal. It's a constitutional death penalty. I will say the president was right about all his rights in removing an ambassador, but among his rights are the right to remain silent. another right that he might exercise. I think in a day or two it's going to be forgotten.
You don't think it'll be another plaintiff?
It may, but I'm not sure that that helps their case. You know, when it goes, I think it may make their case look silly. Do we think it really intimidated this witness?
No.
We think that they loved getting this tweet, right, to complain about it. So, it's a distraction. distraction. But I think, you know, this is Donald Trump. He's always a high wire act. You know, he sometimes gets to the other side of the wire, but there's going to be a few dramatic spills and things along the way. And it's actually a sort of a microcosm of the whole Ukrainian issue, because there is supposedly a favor, give us an investigation on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, in exchange we'll give you the aid and the punishment. And the witnesses were testifying how important this aid was to Ukraine, right, in our interests. And of course, there was no investigation. The aid did get there, and that aid included lethal aid that the Obama administration did not give. So it's a microcosm. It distracts from kind of the real substance of what's going on.
Kim, my view of the former ambassador's testimony is that she was treated quite badly by the Trump administration, and it would have been so much more professional had they simply said, you know, Ambassador, you serve at the pleasure of the president. It isn't working. We'll find another job in the diplomatic service for you. Instead of having Rudy Giuliani out, you know, beating the bushes, criticizing her, Don Jr. tweeting, you know, she didn't deserve that.
Well, no, and the word you used is correct one. It was unprofessional, okay? Again, the president is right. He has the unfettered right to name ambassadors and want people. And, you know, we haven't really heard entirely, I don't think, what she was doing there, and maybe she was in some way undermining the Trump administration, or they certainly felt that you need to have trust in your people. But the way you go about doing is you just say, yep, you know, we really would prefer someone else there. Thank you for your service. Come back and we'll find you another post or something else to do. I mean, she is a career civil servant. But what's happened as a result is, you know, they got to put up, the Democrats on Friday, a very sympathetic figure, and a person who's fairly well spoken. And so, you know, she was able to go through this story and how awful it was for her. And I think a lot of people watching, you know, that might ring a chord. On the other hand, it's also the case that this is, her entire testimony was pretty much derivative to the question of the call between the president and Zelensky. She had left the country several months before that call even took place. So this was really much more about just being able to have a forum in which we said mean things about Rudy Giuliani for a while. And again, I'm not sure that necessarily convinces anyone more on the need for an impeachable, whether this was an impeachable offense.
And on that point about the impeachable offense, Bill, we see the argument from the Democrats is migrating. It now is, it's moved from what they called a quid pro quo, and it's now moved to bribery and extortion. Those are the words that they're expressly using. And it was intriguing to this is, you know, it's become a talking point because all the Democrats are now saying bribery, extortion. And it turns out that one of the reasons they changed was because they had a focus group. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee did a focus group of how this is playing in swing House districts that'll be contested in 2020. And lo and behold, you will not be surprised to learn that the members of that focus group thought that quid pro quo was not as damning and did not sound as awful as the words bribery and extortion. So what do you know? Democrats are now using bribery and extortion. The problem with that is there's no bribery or extortion that I have seen so far. And they're not even citing explicitly any specific current statutes that the president might have broken. Instead, Adam Schiff, we have him giving an interview to NPR saying, well, the founders had a much broader definition of bribery than we currently understand. And it included you know, breach of the public trust and other kind of vaguely defined terms. And I had no idea that Adam Schiff was an originalist.
Right.
Constitutional originalist.
That's right. Look, I mean, this is to be expected. Not only did they poll this, they were looking specifically at Democrats in districts where they were maybe in trouble or something, tight districts, probably Trump districts, right? Battleground districts.
Yeah, that's where they were looking.
That's what they were looking at. So they found that bribery worked better. I mean, look, the Republicans are doing something similar. They're using hearsay, right?
Right.
What they mean is none of the witnesses actually witnessed anything. They heard a guy who knew a friend who had a brother who said. And so that's kind of the that's the public relations battle that's going on. But
I'm not saying the focus group is illegitimate.
Right. But yeah, I think your larger point is, I think, look, bribery is something better, easier to understand, right? You give, but I think the gist of their complaint, which they haven't, as you say, they haven't put down on paper, but is that the thing of value was destroy or tarnishing a potential rival in the—
Asking for the investigation,
that the thing of value would be that Joe Biden would be diminished in a presidential contest by any investigation. That would be a violation of federal election law. But, you know, their problem is when they go from the general to the specific, there often isn't a there, as you point out, like in this, it's kind of a reach.
All right. We're talking about the impeachment hearings and a Democratic presidential campaign, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And just to continue with this point about bribery, Kim, my understanding of what the founders said, thought, was that they thought that bribery then as now is an exchange of a quid pro quo, something actually tangible and real value. I mean, a bribe. You take the cash. You take something really significant. And in this case, there was no Trump asked for the investigation. He never got it. There was no quo. And even if he got the investigation started, there'd be a real question about whether it was, in fact, valuable enough to qualify as a quo. And I say that because you start an investigation, you have no idea where it's going to go. You don't know if you're going to, is it actually going to be, you're going to find something? Is it going to matter? So it's a pretty gauzy definition of any quo, even if there had been an investigation started.
Well, tell you what, if Democrats get their way in defining this as bribery, there's going to be a lot of diplomats around the entire world that ought to be very, very scared. Because, I mean, look, the reality is here that every time we engage in some sort of negotiation or discussion with a foreign country, there is often some exchange of something. You know, we do withhold aid to different countries on the basis of their behavior. We lay out to them, I say, you have a corruption problem. I know we do this often, for instance, in African countries. You have a corruption problem. We want to help you. We want to give you this stuff to help. But you have to prove to us that it's not going to be going into the pockets of some general somewhere, but it's actually going to get to the services that we are providing it for. So there are all kinds of situations. Now, Democrats are an attempt trying to criminalize this kind of discussion. Mick Mulvaney talked about this a little bit in that inartful press conference he did, where he didn't do a very good job of it, where he basically said there's always an element of give and take in diplomatic negotiations. Then the question becomes, are they being done for the good of the country? Are they being done for the good of a personal presidential goal? Sometimes those are also conflated, which makes it complicated. But then in addition, about the value, as you say, and traditionally in all of our precedents and legal precedents, information is not considered a thing of value.
Certainly not under the under the campaign finance laws that I, as I understand them. All right. I mean, I think that maybe the most damage in this Friday hearing in terms of impeachment was done by Donald Trump with his tweet. Other than that, we shall see. Let's move on to the Democratic presidential campaign, which has been shaken up in the last week. Michael Bloomberg suggesting he may get in yet, and is now said to be hiring staff. He's talking to people about his campaign, saying he's not going to run in the first four contests. That's New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada and South Carolina. Instead, bet everything on Super Tuesday, which is on March 3rd, I believe, first week of March. And now we get Deval Patrick, former two-term governor of Massachusetts, who says, I'm the answer to the Democratic needs here. I am going to run. The other candidates are just, you know, saying my way or the highway. I'm the perfect golden mean candidate who can unite the party's factions. Getting in late, Kim, very late. Is this a plausible entrant?
I just don't see that. I know there are a lot of people making the case that somehow he hits a whole bunch of sweet spots that nobody else does, Governor Patrick. But I just, when I look at him and I look at his positions and his governance, he's generally another progressive entering a sea of progressives. I'm not quite sure how he distinguishes himself from a lot of the, at this moment, lower ranked kind of or second tier candidates that are out there. And then you add in addition the fact that he's behind in terms of a ground game in these four early crucial states and in terms of fundraising. I suppose the only thing he could argue is that with all these senators running around, most of whom never run anything, that he does have some executive experience. That could be something he could point to that. But I'm not quite sure that's a big enough distinguisher.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a nice resume, Bill. He's, except for, I guess, in the Democratic primaries, he's worked at Bain Capital, which anything in a Democratic primary these days with the word capital in it is not good, and particularly
much less
one
Bain.
Much less one associated with Mitt Romney in the past. But I have a hard time seeing how he's any different than an Amy Klobuchar or a Cory Booker or any of these in terms of his message.
I think you're right in terms of the message. Look, one thing he is different is an African American. Who was a governor, you know, not a lot of those around. I see these people as more either he could be a vice presidential candidate if he got there, or he, like Mayor Bloomberg, former Mayor Bloomberg, they can ruin it for someone else. I mean, but it's a big hurdle because they're not going to be in this debate next Tuesday. So the debate after that, they keep ratcheting up the requirements. And I don't know whether it's 4%.
4% for December.
For December. That's going to be a lot to achieve. So if they don't, really get their message out there. And I don't know how they – for both men, I think that will be a challenge.
All right. Let's move on to Elizabeth Warren. Was criticized by some millionaires and billionaires, including Leon Kopperman, a Democratic billionaire who's moving to Florida from the Northeast to escape taxes. Also, she's got a new ad out criticizing Kopperman and Lloyd Blankfein, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Peter Thiel, the financier, venture capitalist who supported Donald Trump, and Joe Ricketts, who has a new book out. He's the founder of Ameritrade. And she specifies them by name and by their faces and basically attacks them as people who are relatively unsympathetic. And in case of Kopperman, she flashes on the ad that he's guilty of insider trading. And in Blankfein, he made a killing during the financial crisis. So what do we make of this? I mean, I guess she wants to run against billionaires. It's going to be the centerpiece of her campaign, Kim.
Yeah, and it's a rough ad. And the clear goal here is to focus rage on a specific target, which are wealthy Americans. And I think she's doing it for a couple of reasons. One, in the clear purpose of her ad is to, you know, drum up support or give rationale to her wealth tax, which she is proposing on higher income Americans. But I think the other point of this is just this is pure Elizabeth Warren populism, which is what she has been running on since the beginning of her campaign. And she got into this race, in essence, to be a liberal version of Donald Trump and go after a bunch of those so-called forgotten voters and people who feel alienated from the system. And this is one way of doing it, to try to focus their anger on wealthier Americans. I'm not quite sure we know yet if that will work, because, you know, it's one thing to say government and elites are stacked against you. It's another, I mean, I'd like to think a lot of Americans still believe in success and admire it to a certain degree.
Well, I'm struck, Bill, too, by the fact that Kopperman and Blankfein are two liberal Democrats. And I guess Kopperman may be more centrist, but Lloyd Blankfein, I know him a little bit. He's a liberal, okay? Right. He has all the virtuous positions on everything that, you know, you would think of a New York Democrat. And yet that has not spared him from the slings and arrows of Elizabeth Warren. And that suggests to me that it doesn't matter with her. She's going after anybody who is going to be an easy target and is wealthy. And there's a hook there where she can get at them for some alleged perfidy, or simply you're rich.
Right. Well, the latter part's a big part of it. Remember, Bernie declared there shouldn't be billionaires, right? So we had this crazy situation where Tom Steyer, another billionaire, Democrats seem to attract the billionaires even as they say they shouldn't exist. And Tom Steyer's saying no one should fly. This guy is so rich, he's flying commercial, Bernie's taking private jets. It's a crazy situation, but I think there is a logic to it. First of all, it's the logic to Elizabeth Warren, right? I mean, instead of just we're going to tax the rich, we're going to tax billionaires 2 cents. That's her.
Their assets, not their income.
Right. 2 cents on the dollar, what their wealth. So I think it also may.
By the way, that went up substantially. it's now, I think, 6 cents.
6 cents. You know, clearly her numbers don't add up, and even people in her own party are attacking her for it. And I expect on Tuesday night at the debate she'll be attacked for that again. This may be a distraction. Just focus. I hate billionaires. I'm going to get it from billionaires, a way to reassure people. I'm just looking at the rich. And if I have a problem with the numbers, I'll just raise the tax, as you say. I mean, that's why I think the Bloomberg entry is interesting, because I don't think he can win, but he may be able to ruin it for her. It depends on where he focuses his advertising fire.
Bloomberg said, Kim, he's going to spend $100 million right off the bat in an ad campaign against Donald Trump. No doubt that'll be targeted in swing states. But the question in my mind is he going to spend $100 million targeting Elizabeth Warren if he gets in the race?
Yeah, well, he's going to have to. Look, I mean, I think one thing that's interesting about Michael Bloomberg, and this gets to your point, is that despite the press talking a lot about the centrists in the race versus the progressives in the race, the whole Democratic Party has really shifted left over the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, dramatically. And that includes the Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden's up there saying he's going to shut down fracking with the best of them. This is a dramatic departure. I think Bloomberg is going to look much more like, in some ways and in some areas, a kind of old-fashioned Democratic centrist. We'll see how that plays. But that's going to be his best toehold against someone like, that's going to be his best way to get attention in this crowded primary field, is to really draw distinctions between himself and some of the progressives on the stage, like Elizabeth Warren. So we'll see if he puts that money in. I'm not sure Michael Bloomberg cares much about criticism or blowback that he's being mean to other candidates. He's a bit of a scrapper and a fighter that way.
Yes, he certainly is. I think he spent $150 million to become mayor of New York, maybe in a single race in the last one. I forget his exact number. And he won by a fraction. Bill, if he does skip the first four contests and gets in Super Tuesday and it works, that'd be the first time.
Yes. Look, the odds are against him. His money does make a difference, as I say. I think he can spoil it maybe for someone else, depending on where he focuses his fire. Look, during my sojourn at the New York Post And when Bloomberg was still there, I remember talking about the editor. There's two Bloombergs. There's a guy that did stop and frisk, drove down crime, rezoned the city to make it more attractive for business, founded charter schools. And then there's the other guy, you know, going after soda, the big gulp soda and his health things and so forth. And it depends which Bloomberg he emphasizes. He will have a problem with the Democrats over stop and frisk. I mean, Joe Biden had to renounce his support for the crime bill. And Bloomberg's an even bigger villain in this kind of demonology of
stop and frisk being the policy of stopping somebody and frisk them if you suspect they're carrying a weapon.
And so the argument on the left is that that disproportionately affected men of color, Latino or black, and also more incarceration for them. So he's really on the outs on that. It'd be interesting to see if he sticks to his guns. And charter schools is not something that makes you popular in the Democratic Party either. Yeah. So we'll see which way they go.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with more impeachment editions of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.